and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, U.S. Human Rights Report has condemned Iran, China, Russia, and North Korea for human rights violations. And Washington has signaled out all four states as being the center of instability. This says Iran and Russia are in the process of stabilizing the Middle East and ridding it of terrorists that Washington has supported. We will be looking at the irony of this report on this debate. I'd like to kick this off with Press TV's correspondent in Washington, D.C., Colin Campbell. Colin, thanks so much for being with us. Well, fill us in on some of the specifics of the report and who is saying what and pointing the finger at whom.
Well, the U.S. Human Rights Report is under fire right now for some of the inconsistencies that it has when in reference to some of the things that previous administrations had done in the past. And let me explain a little bit about what that means. When looking at Israel, for example, instead of saying Israel and its occupied territories in the Human Rights Report, it says Israel, West Bank, and Gaza, and it breaks it down, leaving out that specific phrase, occupied territories. Now, previous administrations for years have said that there is an Israel and occupied territories. Those are the areas that Israel has seized control over, and those who live in those areas really don't have their own self-determination. It's really governed by Israel and Israeli officials. Now, again, what the Human Rights Watch report or the Human Rights Report is being criticized about is being deferential to countries that the U.S. is friendly to, for example, Saudi Arabia, leaving out some of the human rights abuses that are happening there. And of course, not pointing the finger at themselves. Many people would say that there are human rights abuses here in the U.S. as well, especially when it comes to marginalized communities, the Black community, when looking at the shootings of unarmed Black men, for example, or looking at the widening wealth disparity or the number of people living on Skid Row, living in poverty. A lot of people would say that these are also human rights abuses, but you wouldn't find all of those things itemized in this report. And that's why it's being heavily criticized right now, and some are saying it's heavily hypocritical.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that. That's Press TV's Colin Campbell. Out of Washington, D.C., I'd like to welcome my guest now to the program, former U.S. diplomat Mr. Michael Springbrett, also out of D.C., and Congressional Defense Policy Advisor Frederick Peterson out of Santa Barbara, California. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off. Frederick Peterson, in the world we live in today, if we look at which entities are involved in more places around the world, can we honestly say that any country more than the United States is more involved in the eternal internal affairs of these countries, whether we're looking at it from a political perspective or militarily? Isn't the U.S. At the top of that list?
Well, the U.S. is certainly involved, being a world power with worldwide responsibilities and actually a high mission not to predate upon neighbors and to try to acquire land and influence around the world, but to achieve higher purposes around the world and to defend actually the interests of the United States and peace-loving peoples of the world against those who would predate against them. Yes, the United States is quite obviously a world power with world responsibilities. Where the rubber meets the road here is how does the United States fulfill its responsibilities as a world power? What are its goals in asserting a foreign policy, and how is it achieving those goals, and are those goals?
Okay. Having a little technical difficulty right there, crossing over to Michael Springman. Interesting comments by Frederick Peterson, and actually I'll pose some of those questions to you. I mean, because we know that the U.S. has almost 800 military bases in 70 countries. So as Frederick Peterson was saying, I mean, what are the goals? Why are they there? What are they trying to do? Your take on this.
Well, my take is that the American bases, and I think nobody knows for sure how many there are, they balance between 800 and 1,000 or more, They're there for control. They're there for showing American power. They're there for dispensing American largesse and to engage in activities to change the internal affairs of the countries in which they're located. The United States has had bases in Germany and Japan for nearly 75 years since the end of the war, and they show no signs of leaving, even though the Germans and the Japanese are beginning to question this. I see no earthly reason why the United States is firing 105 Tomahawk missiles into Syria on the basis of it helps Syria, and it's a humanitarian mission to do this. I think that the United States would do well to withdraw its armies and navies and air forces from Afghanistan and South and Southwest Asia and North Africa and the Far East. I think that the world would be a lot better place, a lot safer place, if these people could live in their own countries and decide their own fates and not have Uncle Sam sitting in Washington half a world away decreeing what must be done and what must not be.
Michael Springman, what do you make then of the United States pointing out or pointing towards other countries about human rights violations when, one, we see many times what's happening inside the country, inside the U.S., which we will get to, and also what we've been talking about, what Washington is doing outside of the U.S. and other countries?
Well, the best defense is a good offense. You talk about the evils of Russia, the evils of China, the evils of Iran, the evils of North Korea. You pick your country that the U.S. doesn't agree with, and generally, in those cases, it's countries that don't toe the American line. And while the United States is talking about these countries and huffing and puffing and ranting and raving about how they're violating civil rights, they completely ignore what happens in the United States with probably the largest prison population of any country in the world, with no idea how these people got there. Access to justice in the United States depends on the depth of your pocketbook, for the most part.
Okay, viewers, our apologies for some audio difficulty that we're having. Hopefully out of Santa Barbara, it's getting better. Frederick Peterson, when we look at this situation, for example, we look at the United States being involved in Syria right now without being invited to this sovereign country. Of course, the United States says that it's trying to help stabilize the situation in Syria, but of course it's tipping the scale towards instability. So how can an entity then like the United States talk about human rights violations when actually they're causing an increase in human rights violations across the world, and right now we're talking specifically about Syria itself?
In fact, we are there precisely because of human rights violations, not to inflict them upon Syria or Syrians, but to rescue Syrians from the gross abuses, use of nerve gas upon civilians, the wholesale slaughter of a civilian population. We have a responsibility to be there, and yet the United States has not gone in with a heavy footprint and a commitment to send more ground troops.
But Fisher Peterson, isn't that part of the problem? That the United States operates unilaterally, does not have a UN mandate, it was not invited in by Syria. So isn't that a violation actually of the rights of that country, sovereign rights of the country, also the human rights on the ground, because the United States is causing, basically saying that it can be judge, jury, and executioner, because it is saying that the Syrian government has done this, these acts as forced poisonous gas or poisonous weapons, chemical weapons, and of course many others are saying that it has not. So where's the equity in all of this?
Well, I am sure that you and your country and all of good faith, as well as I, seek truth in Syria, not to advance a nationalist aggressive position, not to inflict pain and suffering upon civilians, but to seek truth and uplift those civilians, giving them safety, security, and a chance to lead their life in some modicum of human respect for one another. They are certainly not getting that, and I am certain that neither you nor others of good faith would want to extend a blanket pardon or excuse for a regime that is very clearly inflicted upon its own people.
Frederick Peterson, where does the line draw? One second, Frederick Peterson, if we want to look at that, I mean, we can look at inside of the United States. We can look at, let's say, the Native Americans and what happened with the pipeline, and that the police had cracked down on them, that the police had beat people, that the police actually shot some people, that the police used poisonous tear gas, and that has happened throughout the United States. In many cities, what we have seen, tanks on the streets in the United States. Now, some people would say that that's a violation of human rights. So what makes the difference? Why wouldn't we have or expect some other country to get involved then in the domestic affairs of the United States?
Well, I don't really recall, being an American and actually living here, that I ever recall anywhere tanks being on the streets of the United States inflicting upon U.S. civilians. That just simply
No, that's not true, sir. That's not true. After Post Michael Brown in Missouri, there were tanks on the streets of Ferguson, Missouri, actually. So we have many examples of that. Let me cross over back to Michael Springman. And when we look at the hypocrisy in this, and the United States is talking about human rights violation, why is mum the word when we look at Israel, when we look at Saudi Arabia, some of the biggest violators of freedom and human rights globally?
Well, Saudi Arabia buys a lot of things from the United States, $110 billion worth of weapons that President Trump promised them last year. Israel is deeply involved in internal American politics and deeply involved with the American intelligence services and the military-industrial complex, as set forth in the book Dangerous Liaison by the Coburn, you spell it C-O-C-K-B-U-R-N family. It truly is astonishing that they have their tentacles into the highest parts of American public life. Israel and its cat's paws, the Jewish Federation of Richmond, Virginia, for example, and another number of organizations are trying to change American textbooks and what they write about Israel. And they have pushed very hard to have the Commonwealth of Virginia put Israel in a much more favorable light, ignoring words like occupied territories and saying instead controlled territories. So it really is hypocrisy. And if you keep talking about other people's problems, people will not have the wit or the acumen or the education or the information to look at what's happening in the United States and what the American government has done to its own people, whether you're talking about the federal government in Washington or some of the more repressive state governments. Up in North Dakota, they had protests last year about pipelines and running a pipeline through a water basin that supplied drinking water and was considered sacred territory to some of the Indian tribes. Yet they militarized the response to this and began putting people in jail because they were speaking out against the pipeline and demanded that this be done in accordance with the law. And of course, when it's a conflict between the law and the corporations usually win. And that's what's happening in America.
What about that, Frederick Peterson? Is part of this a smokescreen to make a lot of noise that actually those from the outside don't concentrate on what is happening in the United States, whether we're talking about out of Flint, Michigan, where people still don't have clean water to drink, which is a human rights violation, or we're talking about black and brown people who are more likely to be arrested, more likely to be killed, especially black men, by police with no one actually having to go to trial afterwards. So is it just to make a lot of noise? Because it seems like much of the world is not going to actually believe what the United States is pointing out as others' human rights violations.
I agree with your objectively with you on your use of the word smokescreen. However, that's what we've been listening to in the last iteration of the program. This is a smokescreen and illusion aggressively puffed up by people in order to distort what is actually happening. We talk about black and violence, who do you think is committing the crime in cities like Chicago, where the crime rate is out of hand? Who is committing the crime? Is it suburbanites that are going into the city for a night of rape and pillage? And no, it is not. What is the cause? What is the root of the growth of crime and violence within the city? Basically, it is a breakdown in the Black family structure, where families do not live together anymore because they have been induced by a very, very misleading, if not diabolical.
Well, many would say, sir, many would say that is actually from the discriminatory laws inside of the United States. Because if we want to go back and we look at the whole crack epic of whatever was happening, and we know that when individuals were actually on crack, that was brought into the Black neighborhoods by the U.S. government, and if they were caught then with this drug, they were immediately demonized and put to jail, and then we had the three strikes and you're out, and some of them for life. However, now that there's an opiate crisis, now that the majority of those who are addicted to the opiates are white, we see a call now for helping them and for educating them. So isn't it indicative of the discriminatory nature of the U.S. government and continually weeding of the rights, human rights, of minorities in that country?
There's more of that smokescreen we were talking about. That is an absolutely upside down, inside out description of what is actually happening. And it is not doing the Black community any favors whatsoever.
Wow,
and
that's amazing. That is absolutely amazing, Frederick Peterson.
I happen to look at...
Okay, absolutely
indeed
amazing, your comments. Let me get Michael Springman back in on this. Michael Springman, your take on all this, because if we look at, again, inside of the United States, and we see, for example, political prisoners who've been in jail, solitary confinement for 40 years, when the United States continually talks about prisoners in other countries, but has actually one of the worst records if we're looking at other prisoners, and the overcrowdedness and the amount of people who are in prison, more people percentage-wise in prison in the United States than any other country in the world, and of course the majority of them percentage-wise minorities. So, I mean, isn't that indicative of a regime that is actually continually weeding the rights of human rights inside of the country?
Yes, it does. I mean, you're dealing with centuries of discrimination against various minorities and groups that don't have the organization or the funds or the knowledge to fight back. Some people have fought their way out. Organizations have worked very hard, such as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP. You've got organizations like that fighting on behalf of their membership and trying to do something about the situation. And you've got a government that essentially doesn't want to provide any resources except to its war machine, that most of the Americans' trillion-dollar budget for the federal government goes for the Defense Department. You look at Puerto Rico, for example, a country with two-thirds the population of Singapore. Singapore has no natural resources. Puerto Rico does. And Puerto Rico doesn't have any power on the island again for the second time in about 6 months. There are six FBI offices there looking for terrorists, and yet somehow they can't seem to think that there's something wrong with a rich colony, which has been in American possessions for more than a century, that there is dire poverty, dire lack of education, even though there's plenty of resources and plenty of education, and you've got a diaspora of Puerto Rico to New York. And nobody wants to look at what's doing on the island. It's the American government looks at things through the wrong end of a telescope. And what they want to do about it is throw more money at the police, throw more tanks and riot gear and bulletproof vests and whatever, give them machine guns, give them army rifles. And yet they don't go to the basis of the crime in the United States. They don't go to the basis of poverty in the United States. People go for drugs because they see to hope for their own future, and they figure they can blank it out for a little bit by taking various kinds of illicit substances. So it's a lack of education. The school system is a shambles. You've got government at all levels arguing with each other and in trying to make politics rather than deal with reality and to help the least part of the population that has the worst chance of bettering itself. So I think that's what you've got to look at. And instead, the Americans rant and rave about the evils of Saddam Hussein or the evils of Bashar al-Assad and do their best to disturb and divide and wreck the economies of these countries.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd like to thank both of you for being with us on another debate. Former U.S. diplomat Michael Springman out of Washington, D.C. and Congressional Defense Policy Advisor, Mr. Frederick Peterson out of Santa Barbara, California. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thank you and see you next time.